We have the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar with us on the line. Taoiseach, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us this morning on Kerry Today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Can I ask you, first of all, what's your information or what information have you on the latest situation between Israel and Hamas and the agreement yesterday to release hostages, and whether we can hope that Emily Hand might be part of any release that looks now it won't happen before tomorrow morning?
So, yeah, it is hard to get accurate information at the moment, but the information that we have from our partners internationally is that the 4-day ceasefire will apply from tomorrow, and about 10 or 12 hostages will be released. These are the hostages held by Palestinian groups in Gaza. They'll be released over the next 4 days, and in return, Israel will release about 150 Palestinians, mainly women and teenage boys, held in their prisons. So we know that Emily Hand is on the priority list because it's children and women with children that are being prioritised. But it is a fluid situation. We don't have any definite information about her well-being or whereabouts. But hopefully she will be back with her family in the next couple of days. And that's something we're working towards, and a lot of contact with the Israeli authorities, the Egyptian authorities, the Qataris who've brokered this agreement as well, trying to make sure that we can get our citizens out and back to safety. And it just must be, it's hard to fathom what an experience like that must be for a 9-year-old girl to be held hostage, to be away from her family and friends, held in a tunnel in the darkness. Just hard to contemplate, and we're doing everything we can to secure her release.
And please God, that does happen. Can I ask you about an issue here closer to home, Taoiseach? The international protection applicants who arrived into Killarney yesterday in the Muckus Road in the King's Court Harmony, and Deputy Danny Healy-Ray and Thomas Pringle exchanging some very strong words in Dáil Éireann last night in relation to this. Deputy Danny Healy-Ray has been to the forefront of criticising the government policy of allowing international protection applicants, or specifically how many of them, alongside Ukrainian refugees into Killarney and into Kerry. He says there's a place called Stop. What's your response to his criticism and concerns expressed by local residents here?
Look, when it comes to local residents, I think we need to listen to people's concerns. You know, any time a large number of people move into your area, you know, whether they're asylum seekers or students or legal migrants or, you know, travellers, you name it, any time it's an issue of people moving into an area, people have concerns and they need to be listened to and assuaged. But I need to be honest with people as well. That there is a difference between people coming from Ukraine and people who are seeking international protection. People coming from Ukraine have the right to come here. That's European law. It's something that all 27 member states have signed up to. And we can't absolve ourselves from that unless we're willing to leave the European Union and stop producing beef and not have tourists come to Ireland and all the rest of it. I don't think anyone's proposing any of that. So that's, you know, that's a situation we have to manage and struggling to, but we are managing it, and I'm proud we've been able to accept 100,000 people from Ukraine into Ireland. International protection is different. These are generally people coming from outside the European Union, and they just arrive. It's not the case that the government is letting them in. You know, there's a bit of naivety around that, I think, sometimes. You'll remember when Donald Trump got elected, he was going to build a wall and nobody's going to come from Mexico or South America. Didn't work. A far-right government got elected initially. Within weeks, more people landed on the island of Lampedusa than lived there. Britain, part of the reason they had Brexit was because they were going to control their borders and stop irregular migration, and they actually have record levels of it. And the truth is, there's big problems in the world. There are hundreds of millions of people on the move, and it's not a surprise that the 10 or 20,000 might get to Ireland every year. They do, and arrive in all sorts of different ways. There are things we can do about it, of course. Work with our European partners to secure our external borders, make sure that our border controls work better. But above all, what we need to do when people do arrive is to make sure that they do get their basic humanitarian needs looked after. We are a decent country in the end of the day, but also that their applications are processed quickly. And if they are genuine refugees, that they're given status and they can start to build a life in Ireland. If they're not, then it gets refused, and the deportation deportation process begins. And Mr. McEntee has signed over 600 deportation orders this year, the highest in a very long time. So look, it's a complicated situation. There's a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, and no one's denying that. But it's about how you manage
bringing people in is just not correct. You know,
it's about how you manage. It's about how you manage it. I mean, there are 9,000 Ukrainians in Kerry, nearly 10% of the national total, the largest number of any local authority in the country and the largest amount in any local authority setting outside of Dublin. The Killarney electoral area has the highest LEA in the country, hosting 2,443 Ukrainians, with the top three local electorates all being in Kerry. So have you got the management of it wrong and the pressure on local services? There was a letter from Kerry County Council that went to the Department of Education effectively saying, we don't have the services to take these people or any more of them.
It's a big challenge all over the country, in some towns and villages in Kerry, in parts of Dublin, in lots of parts of Clare and Mayo. You gave some numbers there. I think it's important to say that when it comes to international protection, you know, that's people generally coming from outside of Europe. Kerry has about 3% of the population and has about 3% of IP. So that would be in line with your population. When it comes to Ukraine, it is correct that Kerry has accepted and welcomed a disproportionate number of people from Ukraine. That's largely because that's where there was accommodation available in what is an emergency scenario. And I appreciate that that has impacts, impacts on services and impacts on the economy and tourism industry in particular. And we'll respond to that, you know, with additional resources for schools, for healthcare, and then also support for businesses that may be affected. And I do appreciate that is a big issue. But you know, when 100,000 people arrive in your country in the space of 2 years, it's an emergency situation, and the perfect is the enemy of the good. And you try to provide as much accommodation as you can wherever you can find it.
Are you concerned about the impact in this country by the numbers coming in and the anti-immigrant sentiment that's there? Last night in Holland, Geert Wilders, long-time anti-immigrant politician, shocked the country, shocked Europe really. 37 seats, looking to form a government, looking to close these borders and ban the Quran. Are you afraid that will happen here with people voting for anti-immigrant candidates?
I'm not so naive to think that it mightn't happen. And I do know how that plays out, you know, in countries that turn to populism. Their problems get worse, not better. And generally, on the rare occasions that those people get elected, they do get booted out again. You know, we saw that with Bolsonaro in Brazil. Trump didn't get re-elected in America. In Poland, has gone the other way. The far-right government there, having failed to turn the clock back, because he can't in the real world. Having lost the elections there, and Donald Tusk, you know, is a centrist and a progressive coming back again. But I'm not naive to the fact that this could become part of our politics, and that a lot of people will be creating false narratives and divisive narratives in the hope of getting elected. But they've no solutions to the real problems that the world faces. You know, the world is rapidly changing. The world that I grew up in the 1980s is not the world we live in now, and it's changing faster all the time. You know, there's climate change and the big response that we need to that. There's changes in demographics, not just migration, also aging and all the implications that that has for health and pensions and so on. Rapid technological change, changing the way we work. Rapid change in the media as well. You'll know better than most how social media has changed the way media works. There are some people who will say that you can turn the clock back on all that and make it go away again. That's not honest. It's not true. It's populist. It's nostalgic. It fails any time that kind of politics is tried anywhere in the world. It actually makes things a lot worse. Or you can opt for centrist politics, for progressive politics that says to people that these changes are real, and they have to be managed and managed better and done in a way that is just and fair. And that's the alternative. And I think ultimately that will win out. But that's not to say that we won't see populist politics in Ireland. I think we will.
Okay, can I ask you about how concerned you are about our economy and how you plan for the future? Speaking of which, the increase in PRSI that was announced to pay for the luxury, I suppose, if you call it, some people would say the reality of retiring at 66, does this not show the falsity of the refusal to increase the retirement age? Like, we'll pay for it one way or the other?
But that was a choice that we had to face. So if you go back to, again, the 1970s and 1980s, the average person lived to about 70 or 72. So, you know, the whole pension system was based on the idea that you know, work and pay in for about 40 years and you might get to enjoy 5 or 6 years of retirement. that's totally changed. You know, health's improved, life expectancy's improved, medicine has improved dramatically. People live regularly now into their 80s and 90s, and that means that our pension system doesn't add up anymore. So we've taken a decision that people will still be able to retire at 66. Now, you'll be able to choose to retire a bit later if you want to, and you'll get a bigger state pension if you retire a bit later. But you can still retire at 66, but a cost comes with that, and that cost has to be borne. Again, some people, the populace, will tell you that you can continue to retire at 66 and someone else will pay for it. That's not realistic. If we're all going to continue to retire at 66, then there's a cost associated with it. And it's a relatively modest cost. You know, it's a 0.1% increase in PRSI every year or every other year, so an extra €50 a year. And I think that's the right decision.
Okay, and that's the way things will go. Let me ask you another question based on a concern that's been expressed on this programme several times, and from what we're seeing from what's happening on our streets and our villages, €90,000 worth of cocaine seized in rural Listowel yesterday. We have Kerry young people being recruited as money mules, a number of cases before the courts, stories of drug debts being paid off by families. Where do you stand on the argument that we are failing and failing badly in dealing with this problem? We have the fourth highest cocaine use in the world per capita in this country, and we're dealing with it by putting people through the courts and putting them in jail, even if they have a small amount for personal use. Are we on the wrong road?
Well, I think above all, what we seek to do is to build safer, stronger communities. And what's happening with drugs around the country, with illegal drugs, is a big threat to our communities. There are different ways of managing it. Part of it is a criminal justice response and supporting the Gardaí in their work. And you'll see the success that they've had in stopping drugs from getting into the country. You know, particularly the seizure of the Matthew vessel there recently and other seizures around the country. But it won't just work as a criminal justice response. Things are changing. We're seeing reduced consumption of alcohol, for example, but more people are using recreational drugs. And I think the best approach to that is a health-led approach. It's absolutely targeting the dealers and the criminal gangs. But when it comes to individual use or people who face addiction, I think a health-led approach is a much better one.
Do we need to stop putting people before court for individual use then?
Well, I'm not sure how often that actually happens, and I did ask the Gardaí about that, and they would say it would be extremely rare for them to seek a conviction for somebody where it's personal use. But sometimes they suspect that the person is actually dealing, and their excuse, if you like, is personal use, and that's why they go for that prosecution. But there are alternatives now. There is the adult caution, and the Department of Health has developed an alternative approach, which is a health-led intervention. And I think that is the correct way that is the correct way to go. But you know, one thing we should never forget, and I've said this before, the biggest drug of abuse in Ireland by a distance is alcohol. If you go to any cemetery in Ireland, there are more people in there as a consequence of alcohol than any illegal drug. And if you look at things like violence in our street, if you look at violence against women, violence against children, you know, even issues like homelessness, for example, the drug that does the most damage in our society by quite a distance is alcohol. Alcohol consumption is coming down because of government efforts, but we also need to not be hypocritical about it too, you know, and saying that alcohol is fine and I think we need to face up to the fact that the most legal drug in Ireland is alcohol. It's a big business. I drink. I don't know if you do. If somebody tried to ban alcohol, what would happen? We'd have illegal alcohol being run by criminal gangs, and people get overdosing because of impure alcohol. You know, so we need to be, I think, a bit grown up about our approach to all this.
Okay, final brief question, and very brief because we're pushed for time. I know you are too. Fine Gael and Kerry, are you in trouble? Brendan Griffin leaving politics, no obvious replacement thus far. Councillor Patrick Connors-Gartine shocking everybody, announcing he's not running in the local election either.
I think we've great candidates for the local elections. We've almost completed our selection for the local elections. Some really good sitting councillors running again. Most of them are.
You can't find anyone in Killarney, a big town, a big area.
Yeah, and we actually don't have a sitting councillor in Killarney, so that will be a gain for us. I expect the local elections, but once we've identified a good candidate, and that's a great opportunity for anybody who lives in the Killarney area who might like to serve on the council. You know, there's definitely enough Fine Gael votes in a big town like Killarney to elect a councillor, and we're looking for a candidate. And then once we've the local elections done, either before or after, we'll be able to select a all candidate. And, you know, Kerry is a place where we've always had a TD, sometimes two, and I'm confident that we can hold that seat. But, you know, that means investing in the county. And, you know, one thing I was really glad that we were able to sign off on only this week was, funding for the Adair bypass. That'll improve access to Kerry very considerably. Yeah. I've been stuck on that road many a time. Just opened Macroom Ballyvourney there the other day. I want to make progress in Farran Four as well. I know Brendan Griffin hasn't retired yet, still working really hard on getting funding for that project, making sure that we get good jobs into places like Tralee as well. And you'll heard the good news on that in recent months. And then as well, making sure we invest in healthcare and education. So that's the focus for us, and of course helping people with the cost of living and putting money back in their pockets. And people will see over the next few weeks what that looks like when they receive the one-off payments, and then also the tax reductions in the new year.
Sure. Okay, Taoiseach, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for talking to us on the programme this morning. This is Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. If you have a view on what he said on any one of those issues, please get in touch with us on the programme.